I wonder how many of you remember an old TV series called Unsolved Mysteries. Now, some of you are too young to know it, so probably. But anybody remember the old series, Unsolved Mysteries? It was a series that focused on inexplicable events like UFO sightings, ghost encounters, miracles, bizarre murders, strange legends. And because the some of the episodes, many of them involved paranormal activities, the NBC used to run a disclaimer at the beginning of the program denying network responsibility for the content of the show. It was fairly popular for a number of years, and I think the reason so is because all of us have had inexplicable events in our lives, things that we can't fully explain, things that are, in some sense, incomprehensible, mysterious, just don't add up quite. I remember my own family had a story. My aunt, back in the 90s, was selling her home. She had owned it for 20 years. It was an old pre-war house. And because she was selling her house, she was working on getting it ready for sale. And there was this slot in her wooden floor in her kitchen that wasn't properly in place. And she had lived with it for many years. But now that she's selling the house, she had to finally get it fixed. And so she pulled it up in order to put it back into proper position. And when she looked inside of it, into the ground, she saw this old newspaper article. In fact, it was the front page of the Hamilton Spectator from 1942. And she reached down, she pulled it up. And when she looked at it, she was just kind of, her mind was blown. Because on the front page of the newspaper was a picture of her father, my grandfather, and her uncle. And it wasn't just any kind of picture. You see, these two young men were serving in the Hamilton Royal Light Infantry and had been involved in the attack at Dieppe and had been captured by the Germans. They were now prisoners of war. And the Red Cross had taken a picture of these two guys and had brought it back and given it to local newspapers in Canada and the Hamilton Spectator, because these two men were Hamiltonians, had put it on the front page of their paper and had talked about them in the newspaper article. And here she's staring at this newspaper 50 years later about her father and her uncle. And it's actually even more poignant for her, because when my grandfather, her father, came back after the war, he just couldn't hack it around here, and he moved away. And she never saw him again. In a sense, World War II took her father. It took my mom's father, too. It took my grandfather away. I never met him. And yet, she had nothing really of tangible character, or she had nothing tangible about him in her life. And now she was holding on to this newspaper clipping that was about him and her uncle. And this really touched her powerfully. And I'm thinking to myself, what are the chances of that ever happening? You know, in your house, underneath your kitchen floor, there's an article about someone super important to you. And then one day, for reasons that seem unconnected, you find this newspaper clipping about someone important to you. Inexplicable things happen all the time in life. Most of the time, we're not really aware of it. Or we have a vague sense of something, but we can't put our finger on it. We sometimes call it a sixth sense. Or we feel out of sorts in a situation that we can't really fully explain. And you know, there's this kind of fanciful belief today that science will solve all the mysteries of life, but I'm pretty confident that's not going to happen. And it's not a criticism of science, it's just that there's a basic inscrutable nature to reality. We'll find ourselves in our investigations going to a certain place, and then we can't go beyond it. That's already happening in many of the specific dimensions of science today. We can't get any deeper into the atom, into the subatomic particles anymore. We just can't go below a certain level. It's just not available to us. We have no idea how life got started on the earth. It's just a complete mystery to us. In fact, the more we study it today, the more mysterious it is, because we understand in a way that they didn't 50 or 100 years ago what you need to have for the most basic cell to start as life on earth. And as we study it more and more, it becomes more and more complex and more fascinating. and more mysterious. How could something like abiogenesis, life just spontaneously happening, how could life just pop out from non-living materials? It seems, as we study it, to be more and more inexplicable. We don't understand it. We don't understand consciousness. We don't understand our own experiences. What causes the rise to your own subjective experiences in life? Even something as simple as putting up your hand like this is a mystery. You can actually, in your mind, say, I'm going to put my arm up, and you can do it. How does that work? We don't know. We really don't know how that actually works. Sometimes when I'm actually playing music, I become very conscious of that fact. I don't really understand how my body works. How is it that you can take an idea in your mind, a sound or a song, and play it on a musical instrument? How am I doing this? Maybe you have things in your own life that you think in the same way. Like, how do you do what you do? We don't understand the fundamental causes of dementia or Alzheimer's. And the reason for this is that we don't have a working hypothesis of how memory works in the human being. We have no working model of memory. And that really makes studying and ultimately potentially curing dementia a real problem. We don't know how our memories are held in our brain or in our mind. So I was saying to you, there's, in many important ways in life, our circumstances are inexplicable, that is, they're unexplainable. They are immune to a full explanation. And you're going to have to find a way to live in the gap between what is and the reason for it being so. And often, that living in the gap requires faith, because you're never going to get a full answer. You know, the wind touches your face, and you can feel the effect of the wind, but you may not know what the underlying cause of the wind is. What is the wind, really? I'm not sure we really know the answer to that. You know, if I take this book and I let it drop on the ground, what do we call that? We call it gravity. And we can even actually design mathematical equations to explain the effect of gravity, but we don't know what that is, actually. What is gravity, really? What is gravity? There is no scientific explanation for what gravity actually is. And so we're looking at a story today in the Gospel of Luke called The Journey to Emmaus. It's the primary story in Luke's Gospel of Jesus' interaction with his disciples post-death, post-resurrection. And it's a long story, which is why we've been breaking it down. We started last week, we're on this week, we're going to go 2 more weeks with it. We're going to take 4 weeks to look at this really mysterious and involved story, because there's so many important features that usually gets overlooked as we rush through the story. Now remember, we're still back in Gospel of Luke. We're back on Easter Sunday, even though now we're in our own world 2 weeks away from Easter. Easter's a long time ago for us. But in the Gospel of Luke, we're still in and on Easter Day. And we've learned that two of Jesus' disciples have decided to go home. And we talked about this last week. Why are they going home? And the answer is pretty simple. Because their Messiah, their king, their leader is dead. And they have no reason to stay. See, in the ancient world, if your Messiah dies, either you find a new one to follow or you go home. That's your two choices. And the two disciples from Emmaus, they decide to go home. And sometime, I figure around lunchtime, they pack up their stuff and they head out. And in one sense, this is completely understandable. There's nothing left for them here in Jerusalem with the other disciples. Their leader is dead and they have no reason to stay. But in another sense, it's somewhat inexplicable why they're leaving at this moment. See, because the two disciples were there when the women came rushing back with a story of a vision of angels. They have this amazing report of an angelic encounter, and the angel's telling these women that Jesus is not among the dead, he's alive. And even though, as a group, the disciples dismissed this report as outlandish, as bizarre, weird, inexplicable, unfathomable, incomprehensible, nonetheless, some of them go down to the tomb to take a look. And what do they discover? They discover things exactly as the women said. The body of Jesus is missing. The tomb, actually, the stone over the tomb has been rolled back. The body's missing. There's grave clothes in the tomb itself. They didn't meet any angels, but the whole thing stands before them as some giant conundrum. What are they going to do with this? Something weird is up. There is an unsolved mystery unfolding right before them, right at this moment. And yet, at this very moment on Sunday, these two disciples decide still nonetheless to go home. They've been formulating this plan in their mind probably for a couple days now. After Jesus was crucified, after he's placed in the tomb, after they come to the realization he really is dead, they've been planning this for a couple of days now. They're going to go home. And you'd think that with all this new data coming in at the moment, that they might stick around for a little longer to see where it went, figure out what's all going on in this circumstance. But on one fact, they are certain. Dead bodies stay dead. You might even say that this is a basic fact of life for them. Once things are dead, they stay dead. And whatever has happened to Jesus' body, maybe it's a kind of mystery. Maybe it's an unsolved mystery for them. Maybe it's worthy of a television segment. But it doesn't change the underlying fact of life that dead things stay dead. And Jesus is dead, and he's going to stay dead. And so there's no point sticking around. For all the commotion and drama, the only fact at hand that matters to them is still the same. And so they head out. They haven't gone very far when a stranger approaches them and begins to walk with them. And we know that this stranger is Jesus because Luke tells us so. But neither of the two disciples know it's Jesus. In fact, we're told they're kept from recognizing him. It's something that Doug emphasized in his reading. As I was mentioning to you last week, I think the best explanation for not recognizing Jesus is that they don't expect to see him. They don't expect to see him because he's dead. How could he be walking alongside them if he's dead? Makes no sense. And here's another inexplicable feature of life, a mystery. Perception. Why do we sometimes see things and other times we don't see them? Why at sometimes do we hear things and other times we don't hear them? As many of you know, I'm an avid drummer. Can you tell? And actually, Dave Webster and I went maybe 17 years ago to study djembe drumming. It's a long time ago, isn't it? Remember that, Dave? Yeah. And in the djembe drum, I'm not going to show you right now, but there's three basic sounds. There's a bass sound, there's a tone, and a slap. And what's fascinating is for a long time, I could not hear the difference between the tone and the slap. As hard as I tried, as hard as I listened, I could not hear the difference between them. It was so frustrating. I knew there must be a difference. Everybody was telling me there was a difference between them. In some visceral sense, I could sense there was a difference between them, but I could not hear the difference between them. I don't know if you've ever heard of the notion of sitting in the pocket. It's a musical term when a group of people play together. And the pocket is that magical place that takes effect when everything comes together. You get into the groove with each other, and something magical takes place. And you hear it talked about all the time, but when you're studying music, when you're playing music with other people, it's such a rare event for it to happen. In fact, for many of us, it never happens to us. And yet we yearn to be in the pocket with somebody. We want to be in the groove with them. We want to have that synchronicity of connection with them. And yet it's so elusive. But here's the thing. If you don't believe it exists, you're never going to find it. If you're not convinced there's a difference between a slap and a tone and a drum sound, you're never going to find it in life. You got to believe first before you're going to find the effect later. If you don't believe it, it's not going to happen. Sally and I had this kind of experience with the eclipse last Monday. I wonder if you had something similar. I thought this was all a bunch of hullabaloo. I didn't really believe it. Like, I thought it was exaggerated. I thought people were making it up. I thought people were making a big deal about something. But anyway, on faith and on encouragement, we headed down to Coketown to see the eclipse. And when we got there, we put our glasses on, you know, and all of a sudden, we didn't realize it because we couldn't tell at first, just looking at it normally, that the sun was already being masked by the moon. The moon was already halfway across the sun by the time we got there. You couldn't tell it by the light around you. Nothing seemed very different at all. And as we're looking up and we're looking at the sun and we're watching the moon cross it and we're waiting for the full eclipse to happen, we're wondering if this is the moment. No, this is the moment. No, this is the moment. We kept wondering over and over again, Sally and I, whether this was the moment of the eclipse. In fact, at one point, I thought I missed the eclipse. I blinked and I lost it. It had already gone by and nothing really happened. And then all of a sudden, bam, there it was, right? And I didn't even need the glasses anymore. I took them off. And I just looked up and I saw this black disc covering the sun. And I was living in dusk. And Venus was shining in the sky. And the streetlights were all lit up. You know, the disciples who are walking with Jesus need some special kind of glasses in order to see him. Cleopas and his partner couldn't see Jesus. See, their ideas of life and death had become a barrier to their perception of him. They needed special glasses of a sort to see him, but they didn't have any glasses. I got my special eclipse glasses on Amazon. In fact, I got a 12-pack. I sold some to you. Made a big profit, I might point out. But actually, I didn't really. But I could have, right? And these glasses allowed me to see something that I couldn't otherwise see. But I went on Amazon to see if I could find any glasses that would allow you to see resurrected bodies. And I didn't find any. You won't find them there either. Cleopas and Jesus get into a conversation about the events that happened in Jerusalem on Good Friday and Easter. And it's kind of ironic. Cleopas is talking about Jesus to Jesus, but he doesn't know this. He hasn't figured this out yet. He's still blinded by his own perception. And his perception is blinded by the fact that he doesn't believe Jesus can be there in front of him. And then Cleopas goes through a whole litany of details of Good Friday and Easter. I won't go over them because we're running a little late today. But he gets all the data right, but he still can't see Jesus. He's got all the necessary information to see, but there's something blocking him from seeing, and it's his beliefs that are getting in the way. See, he thought Messiah was going to lead Israel to a new redemption. He was convinced that God was going to send the Messiah to redeem Israel, and he thought Jesus was this guy, and now Jesus is dead, which means Jesus can't be the Messiah, because Messiahs can't die in life. And Cleopas rehearses to Jesus everything that's happened Easter morning, you know, the women's visions of angels, the comments of the angels that Jesus is alive, the empty tomb, all this stuff goes on, and it says at the end of the passage, but the women did not see Jesus. And there's a moment of irony in that moment as perception is so fickle before them. The women didn't see Jesus, neither did Peter and the other disciples see Jesus, and now Cleopas and his companion are saying, we don't see Jesus either, even though he's standing right in front of them. And it makes me wonder what we might, each of us here, be missing because our perception today is so dominated by what we think is possible. What are you missing today in your own life that you can't see because your perception is dominated by your pre-existing beliefs? You know, one of our bedrock beliefs at Trillium is God's ways mysterious. Do you believe that? Are God's ways mysterious? If we do believe that, then why are we frustrating God with our hyper-skepticism? Why are we practically denying what we utter as an act of faith or a matter of belief? If God's ways are mysterious, it's because God's ways are ultimately inscrutable to us. And we can't really see in or through them. We don't understand the processes by which God brings the effects into our lives. We don't get to see the cause, we do get to see the effect. The important thing to remember for us today is that much of life is inscrutable beyond an easy explanation. Life is an essential mystery. Death is a great mystery too. And there is Jesus walking beside the two disciples as they head to Emmaus. And we see the Lord of life and death walking to Emmaus. If they only had these special glasses, they would be able to see him. But as I say, you can't buy these anywhere. And over the next couple of weeks, we're going to find out how Jesus begins to shift Cleopas and his companions' perception. He's going to give them a new perception. And he's going to reroute their way of seeing and knowing. And I think what Jesus did for Cleopas and his companion, he can do for us too. I think Jesus can do that right now for us if we want him to. We don't have to wait till next week. Let's open ourselves to God's mysterious ways. Let the Lord of life come to us in spirit and truth. And we might just find that the impossible starts to look very possible.